Hello and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heck.
And I'm Jason Jones.
Hey, do you realize that we've been doing this for almost 10 years now?
Good God.
I think it was 2006 when we started.
Wow. We didn't stick with it the whole way, though, but...
Yeah, doing the show kind of took a lot of my time.
Yes.
Although, we've been pretty good about doing this once a month, so...
Yeah, that seems feasible.
We should try to keep it up. Anyway, our topics today are VR. We're going to talk about the Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive, and the PlayStation VR, all of which are shipping this spring. Is that correct?
You tell me.
I think the Rift and the Vive are shipping this spring, and PlayStation VR is probably a little later in the year.
Yeah, I want to say I was reading something a couple of weeks ago, and... they were talking about the Rift, and they said, like, this month, which seems...
I
want
to say the 28th.
Oh, really?
Which is tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, also, you know, we should talk about in that topic is these rumors about a PlayStation 4.5 or PlayStation 4K.
Oh, yeah. I saw a headline about a 4.5 the other day. I didn't bother to click on it, though. I figured it would just make me angry, so...
Probably. All right, our second topic is rip on Nintendo.
Just put it right on Front Street.
Well, Jones, if you look back to some of the early episodes of our podcast, and...
Siri!
What happened?
I said put it on Front Street. Apparently Siri picked up on that and searched for it. It took me out to Bing, and then it started playing a video about putting it on Front Street.
You mean Cortana.
Or shit! I can't believe I did that! I just lost my Microsoft fanboy status.
I thought that was supposed to only work with my voice. Cortana, you've been cheating on me!
What a harlot.
You do not love me like you once did.
That was pretty funny, though. I'm like, what the hell? Because I heard it like go beep beep.
My Google phone does that sometimes. Sometimes if I just say okay, it thinks I'm talking to it, and it goes bloop bloop in the background. I'm like, go to hell, phone. Then when you do try to use it, it never works.
Well, of course. Anyway.
We were talking about, yeah, PlayStation 4K, also a possible upgrade for the Xbox One. It's almost like those consoles were underpowered at launch in order to save costs, and there's no way they're going to last 8 years like the last consoles.
Sounds
about
right.
Or something.
Yes.
But anyway, with our rip on Nintendo section, we are going to rip on Nintendo. 10 years ago, we called the Wii a fad, and no one believed us. And remember how we said that once the Wii users were done with it, they have no brand loyalty and will abandon Nintendo for something else?
Yep. And they did.
We were right. Which is why you should always listen to us. But no, it's a big problem for Nintendo. All the people who love the Wii are now on tablets and smartphones. Can they get them back? So I guess we'll talk about that. And, of course, the things we find annoying about Nintendo. We should do that for Sony and Microsoft, too. Like, the things that really piss us off about Microsoft and Sony.
That's true. Because there are things. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That way we could at least appear to be balanced on some level.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right, finally, our third topic. There's this thing that they're going to try, I think, in the UK and America called the screening room. It's from one of the guys who started Napster. And the idea is it'll be like opening weekend movie rentals streamed to your home. So, you know, like 2 days ago, I could have streamed Batman v Superman to my home instead of watching it in the theater.
Nice.
And it seems like the cost might be like $35 to $50. So we'll talk about the viability of that and why it might work, why it might not work, etc., etc. So, shall we get started with VR?
Very well.
So VR is like the hot new thing, I guess, still. Thanks to Paul Merlucky and the Oculus Rift, and then every other company on the planet started making their own VR. But the major contenders are the Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive, which is the unit developed by Valve, and the PlayStation VR, which apparently will plug into your PlayStation 4. Yeah, so Jones, you play a lot of video games. How do you feel about VR?
I personally don't really care about it. Like, I don't see how it's going to make things better at this point. So, especially for the costs involved. I think it's one of those things where maybe, you know, right now we're at the point where this is like... the birth of it or the stepping stone into it. And, you know, maybe 10 years from now, it'll be really cool. But right now, it's just kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, there'll be a point where you'll be able to plug yourself into a matrix. That will happen eventually.
Oh, yeah.
So all you have to do is interrupt the signals between your brain. And it's just like dreaming.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a part of your brain that turns off your motor functions. So when you try to walk or run away from a creature in a dream, your body itself doesn't replicate those motions.
Nice.
So the bits are there. I mean, I'm sure we can just reverse engineer it and figure it out. So, it'll get to that point eventually. And I think once you get to that point, you know, that's something that everybody would want.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It could be called like the lucid dreamer system. And then, you know, it'll probably be digital download only and people will bitch about it. yeah, but I don't know. It seems like everything leading up to that point, the eye tracking stuff is cool. Like, you've got the helmet on, but you're still using controllers in space.
Yeah.
None of them really use your fingers to actually grab things. So there's still, like, a layer of abstraction between you and the virtual world that you're in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It just... The thing, too, I wonder with these is I have, like, a tendency to get motion sickness. I know I'm not the only person who has this, so it's like, am I really going to go and drop, like, hundreds of dollars on something and then find out, like, oh, I can't even use this because it makes me sick? You know, because it's not immersive enough, basically.
Well, that's one of the reasons they require such massive gaming rigs. You have to render... 60 frames a second per eye, and then you have to do that twice, so you're talking about 120 frames a second. I think they might even aim a little higher than that even. It might be more like 80, because if the latency of the screen moving is not as close as possible to your head moving, then yes, that is what causes the motion sickness.
Okay.
Just like when you're in a car and, you know, the speed of the images outside the window did not match, you know, you looking at things inside of the car, that can cause you to become sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one of the reasons they require so much horsepower. I think a stumbling block, aside from the price of the unit themselves, is I think you have to have at least like a 970 NVIDIA. I mean, you have to have pretty much like, I don't want to say top of the line, but pretty close to top of the line video card to really make it work.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with video cards, but it's like how long's the 970 been around? Is it just like a year or two, maybe?
Probably about a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I guess the Oculus Rift requires like three USB 3.0 ports.
Wow.
I don't know why it needs all that. Well, it has a camera as well.
Okay.
Oh, maybe we should talk about the differences between the systems.
Sounds good.
So the Oculus Rift, there is a headset that has IR blinkers on it, kind of like when a plane lands and it can see the lights on the runway.
Okay.
Or like in Die Hard 2 where they see the fire on the runway. Anyway, so there's a camera on your desk and the camera is looking at you and it can see the infrared dots on the headset, and that's how it knows. Well, that's not the only way it knows the orientation of the head, but that's one of the ways it tracks it. And the controllers also have the markers on them. So basically they're using accelerometers and gyroscopes along with visual tracking to get the finest detail of motion and area and space. And whereas the HTC Vive has like a laser scanner. So the early HTC Vive prototypes, like I actually tried one at Valve, and they had this room that was just used to prototype the Vive, and there were QR codes pasted all over the room. And that was using optical tracking, so the device that you wore would look around the room and see those QR codes and know where it was in space.
Okay.
So it could track, you could walk around the room and it would track everything. Now, obviously, people can't cover their rooms with QR codes. I'm sure a few bachelors out there could do that, but, you know, it's not really practical for most people. So the alternative was to have this laser emitter. And have you ever seen a laser level?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, so imagine the laser level, but there's like two of them, and they're scanning. And you have one scanning on the x-axis and one scanning on the y-axis.
Okay.
And it's constantly, you know, basically sending out scanning pulses. So instead of looking at what the user's doing, there's a base unit. Instead of a camera, it has a laser on it. And then the user with HTC Vive, it's their headset and their controllers are covered with, I assume, some kind of photodiodes. And the photodiodes basically say, am I being hit with the laser or am I not being hit with the laser? Now, since the system knows where the laser scanning is at any given point in time, when a sensor is hit with the laser beam, it knows where that sensor is in space.
Makes sense.
And the advantage of that is you don't have to do optical tracking. You don't have to do like image processing. It's basically a binary state. It's like, okay, you know, maybe the laser has a frequency of like 60 hertz or something. And if this sensor gets hit with this laser at this point of time, it knows that, okay, the laser is pointing, you know, 20 degrees off center, and then the accelerometer and the gyroscope tell you the other data, and that way it gives you a better idea of where it is. And, you know, photodiodes are pretty cheap. I assume they're photodiodes. So, yeah, the system's just plastered with them. Yeah, and then another advantage is that you don't have to do any image processing. You can just basically have microcontrollers that track, you know, the frequency and the impact of the laser on these photodiodes and get a better idea of it in space. So for actually like standing up and walking around in a virtual world, the Vive will probably exceed the Oculus Rift.
Okay.
Then the third one is the PlayStation VR. This one I think is going to be a joke. It's supposed to run off the PlayStation 4. Now, anyone who's followed video games probably knows that the new consoles struggle to do 1080p consistently. And there's a lot of Xbox One games that don't even hit 1080p.
Yeah.
Now, the Call of Duty series always targets 60 FPS, which is cool. But most games do not get close to that. Most games, if they're lucky, can do 1080p at 30 frames a second.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't really think the PlayStation VR is going to work very well. Because you think about it, if there's a, you know, a 1920 by 1080 display inside of the headset and it's split down the middle, you know, one for each eye, which gives you effectively, what is that? Like, what's 1920 divided by 2?
960.
Okay, that gives you 960 by 1080 per eye, which is, you know, that's still pretty good. That's what most of them do. They split the resolution horizontally. But you're still having to render two different viewpoints at probably like at least twice the frame rate that you normally do. So you're talking effectively having to draw 120 hertz 1080p signal. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to have a, you know, severe downgrade in the visual fidelity of what the graphics look like in order to achieve that frame rate.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't know. I think the games might have to be more stylized, like, ooh, you're inside a virtual world, or it's, or maybe the game kind of looks like Tron or something. Like, they'll have to do, like, they'll have to use a visual style to hide the fact that the graphics will be less than what you expect on current gen consoles. I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of post-processing they can do, because there's like an external box for it as well. It doesn't just plug into your USB port. And the idea is the external box does the audio positioning, and it also does frame doubling, so to speak. So like I highly doubt the PlayStation would actually output 120 hertz. It probably would output 60 hertz, and then the system would double that up for each eye.
Yeah.
Well, think about like a 3D Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
So your Blu-ray player is not outputting 120 frames a second to the television. It's outputting two frames at the same time at 24 frames a second, and it's up to your TV to flash between those two at 120 hertz.
Okay.
So that the switching isn't going on over the HDMI cable. It's going on inside of your television circuitry, and I think that's probably what they're doing with this external box and the PlayStation VR.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because if you think about it, if it's requiring like a GTX 970 or better for the Rift or the Valve, the GTX 970 is far beyond what the PlayStation 4 can do. So if that's what those systems require, that means the VR on PlayStation, in order to work, is going to take a significant hit in quality. And I think people are going to be like, oh, it's the cheapest. It's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll be like, oh, you know, it'll probably have the best adoption, honestly. However, I just don't think the video quality is going to be all that great. I could be wrong, but I don't think I will be. I mean, it's like trying to put 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know who's, like, wanting this stuff either, you know? It's like, I don't really hear people talking about this stuff at all.
So you heard people randomly talking about My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2?
Yes.
But not VR.
Out in the world, I heard people talking about that, so I knew it would do fine this weekend, which it has. So,
is there a scene in that movie where they stand in line for an ATM for 5 hours?
I hope not. Wouldn't put it past it, though.
Oh, that reminds me. I had a great idea for a nightmarish kids movie last week. Do you remember when we were kids and movies were scary?
Yeah, like Gremlins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Watership Down?
No.
Oh, God, it's terrifying.
Huh. Anyway, I've heard of it, but never saw it.
Yeah, well, I was watching this, I think it was a retrospective on the Dark Crystal, and Jim Henson was like, movies for kids should scare kids. And I'm like, yeah, damn right.
Well, yeah, there's stuff like Secret of Nim. I don't know if you ever watched that.
Yeah, the first Don Bluth movie at his new studio.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it, but I know what it is.
I don't remember a lot about it, but I do remember that it definitely had, like, scary elements to it.
Yeah. And An American Tale, Five-O Comes to America or whatever?
Yeah. Well, and, like, the Disney movies used to be kind of, you know, had sinister elements to them. You know, like 101 Dalmatians and...
Okay, so you want to hear my idea?
Sure.
Okay, so it stars a mouse, right? And it's, like, and it's a mouse that's, like, realistically rendered, not, like, Five-O.
Okay.
It's not a, you know... bipedal amorphous mouse. I'm sorry, anthropomorphic mouse. And the mouse is like it's a normal day, but then like he's got like his mother and father mouse or whatever, and they're in their nest. But then one day there's like this huge like explosion and everything starts like shaking. And then the mother and father come back and they're horribly disfigured and they die. And the mouse has to like escape to safety. And then the twist ending is it's in Chernobyl.
Oh, geez.
And there's all these mutated, nightmarish creatures it has to, like, you know, fight. And everything's drawn like a surrealistic hellscape. And then the twist ending, like, he finally gets out and you see in the background, dun, dun, dun. That's my idea for a horrifying kids movie. Actually, it probably could just be a short movie.
Yeah, kids won't know what Chernobyl is, but that's fine. So
it's not like the kids are going to watch it anyway. They're just going to watch Shrek 9.
True.
It's okay, so it's a horrifying kids movie that adults... will appreciate.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm going to win an Academy Award for it.
Fair enough.
And it's going to be really dark. It's going to make Watership Down look like Little Mermaid. That's what it'll say in the DVD box.
Well, see, that's how you get your Oscar, is because you put Chernobyl in there, so it makes it, like, topical with, you know, like, nuclear energy and all this stuff, you know, like, it hits on these hot-button issues, so...
Yes, yeah. I want, like, mutated animals and everything. Oh, and if they're humans, they should look like monsters. Because, you know, they'd be dressed in hazmat suits and stuff.
Yeah.
So then you accentuate them so they don't even look human. They look like, yeah, monsters. Because if you're a mouse, you don't know what the hell a human is.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's my idea for a horrifying children's movie. That was not one of our topics.
But maybe you could... put it into a VR environment someday.
Oh, yeah, it's like, you know? It's the first-person view of the mouse.
Yeah, so.
Maybe that's where Five-O came from. Like, his family was killed in Chernobyl.
Yeah, his great-great-grandfather mouse.
Oh, that's right, because Five-O took place in the past, didn't it? I was going to say that movie came out around the same time as the Chernobyl accident.
Yeah.
But you're right, American Tale was like in the 1800s, wasn't it?
Yes,
because wasn't like they get off the boat west. And there's like an Ellis Island for mice or something?
Like yeah, a miniature and then Ellis the sequel Island. Was like Five-O Goes West.
Yeah, and then the next one's going to be Five-O Gets Deported. It could be a dark children's movie.
Mommy, what's deported mean?
Okay,
yeah, so...
VR.
So, like, you've got costs up on the screen there. I don't know if you actually set them before. I don't think you did.
Okay, Oculus Rift is $600. HTC Vive is $800. PlayStation VR is $400.
Yes.
And
it's like... So, it's like, basically, if you have a PlayStation 4, you basically have to buy it again.
Yeah.
Like, dollar-wise.
But that doesn't include the PlayStation camera and the Move controller, which you also need.
So, I mean, it's really more like $500 for PlayStation VR, unless you're like one of the five people who has the Move camera and the controller. So,
yeah, and then Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, you need a pretty beefy PC in order to run them. So you're probably talking like a, you know, $1,500 PC.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just seems like a lot.
Yeah, and so like for me, I mean, I think the best chance for this stuff is on the PC because, you know, I mean, this stuff's right now, it pretty much appeals to a fairly hardcore audience or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's not like soccer moms are going to be running out buying up VR systems. So it's like, to me, in the PC world, it's like, yeah, $600 and $800, that's definitely a good chunk of change. But PC people, like the hardcore gamer types or whatever, are used to investing, I guess, in their systems and, you know, buying like $400 or $500 video cards and shit like that. So if they really want to do VR, you know, it's like, well, you know, $600, what the hell, go for it. Whereas a console, people are used to, I bought the console, I buy games for it, that's all I do for it forever until the next one comes out. Whereas now they're saying, well, yeah, you basically have to pay that same amount of money again to be able to do this. And as you predict, and I think you're probably accurate, the games won't look as good as what you currently play on your PlayStation 4. So I don't know. It just
seems there'll be a hit in graphics quality, and it will be blown up to your entire field of view.
And the thing, too, is with PCs are usually a singular gaming experience, whereas with the console, a lot of times those are more, I don't know, communal experiences or whatever. You know, like if it's a family, maybe the kids sit there and play the games together. Now it's like, well, there's one VR unit. Fight over it, kids.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
You know, so I don't know. It just seems like there's more barriers to it working on the console.
And I would think that you would need the kind of games that would work in VR.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the one I keep coming back to is, you know, like, if I could make a VR game, I would make a Star Fox ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, if you're sitting in a cockpit in the game, people like to sit down when they play video games.
Yep.
So in the game you're sitting, playing the game you're sitting, you're doing the same thing in the game. You can look around and see different perspectives, just like you could in a cockpit.
Yep.
It would actually fit the experience.
Yeah, like driving games would be a good example, too.
But, I mean, those are a small subset of video games. I mean, most video games, like, you're running around and jumping on things, and you really can't do that physically in VR. There's always a separation between, you know, you can have all the, like, the perfect motion in the world and be looking around a room, but you still can't move that far.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, a big part of, I think, the limitation of VR is that we can, you know, if you say virtual reality to somebody, like, their mind is going to conjure up things that are way beyond what this technology is going to be able to provide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they're going to leap to, like, oh, yeah, I could be, like, you know, playing Call of Duty or whatever and, like, running around and ducking behind, you know, walls, buildings, whatever. You know, and it's like, that's not really what this is going to give you.
Right, because you still have to have some sort of abstraction layer. It's like, okay, you can duck, you can turn around, you can aim a gun. There's like certain numbers of things you can do that would be one-to-one, but can you jump? Can you go through a door? How is there tactile feedback? A lot of this stuff you basically can't create in the home environment. There is this thing, someone sent me a video, it's like this VR room. It's kind of like laser tag with VR, and they create like this, I don't know, it reminds me of kind of like a haunted house. They have like a warehouse, and they have all these dividers and walls up, and you put on a VR headset and it maps texture to the walls. I mean, you're still in a VR world, but if you were to put your hand out and hit the wall, you'd actually hit something.
Okay.
But again, you have to create a whole environment for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, back when the Kinect came out, and I'm sure we were ripping on that too, you know, you'd see all these perfectly empty living rooms with families playing happy. It's like, that does not exist.
Yeah.
And it seems like this would make it even more of a problem. I could see it working. I mean, I think VR is there's a lot of cool things you can do, but I think it'll be kind of more of an industrial area. Like if you were an architectural firm, you know, you have all this money, you know, you could have, you know, 1,000-square-foot room in your office that you just use for VR walkthroughs.
Yeah.
You could bring in a client, put their headset on them, and say, okay, here, you can walk around this room of your new building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could tip over and like, oh, I feel like I'm in the space. I get it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now we're going to, so you could walk in like 1,000 square feet. Then, okay, here's the next room. Here's the next room.
Yeah.
Like imagine like a room like this office or this shop here, if it was completely empty and you could walk around in it. I mean, that'd be, mm-hmm. you know, that'd be a pretty, you know.
Yeah, it's a good application amount of space. Of it.
And like, you know, a large company or a company could, you know, they could have a room like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that much empty space in a home, it's never going to happen. It's like you're walking around on this rebel moon base fighting space aliens. And then when you step on a Lego, it takes you out of the experience.
Yeah.
That's what we need is a Lego vacuum. Suck it.
Yeah, another cool game for something like this would be like an operation type game. Because it's like essentially you'd be in like a spot. You don't have to move around a lot, but you could be like operating on somebody.
You know? But where would you get like the tactile feedback of the guts and stuff?
True.
Like you take off the goggles and you realize you just sliced open your dog. Twist ending.
Well, hopefully if you start like feeling things like that, that you're like, well, something's going on here. But again, like you say, it breaks you out of the immersion. So
yeah, I think with car racing or flight games, it would actually be the best.
Yeah.
Because you're holding a steering wheel or you're holding a flight stick. Those are things you can actually get.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that would be really immersive because it would fit.
Yeah. Because that's kind of my thing with all of these right now is it's like, where are the killer apps for them?
Well, I don't know if it's the HTC Vive or the Oculus, but one of the games is called Adrift. It's basically Gravity, the video game.
Okay.
So there you go. You could be Sandra Bullock.
That's my dream. I did see a thing online where like Charlize Theron, she has some charity that she's all about. And it's like if you donate money to the charity, you get entered into a contest where you can win a trip to see the new Huntsman movie or whatever. And you get to meet her and Emily Blunt and Jessica Chastain.
Wow.
And you actually get to have like drinks with Charlize, you know, because she's single. So,
oh, it's just like my Kickstarter idea for Roadhouse 2.
So it's like there's the chance. So got to win it. Then we can go pitch her on Roadhouse 2.
I don't know if we've mentioned this on the podcast, but...
I think we have, but yeah. Feel free again.
Yeah, really briefly. It was really bizarre. We were at lunch one day. Well, not Jones and I, but Max and Felix. And we were talking about Roadhouse 2, if they ever made it. I mean, it's been in development as a remake for a while.
Yeah,
and
it's going to be Ronda Rousey, right?
Yeah, and I was like, you know, that's probably who they'll put in it. And then, no joke, right when we got back from lunch, Max came out of the bathroom looking like he'd seen a ghost. And I think he was, like, taking a dump and reading the news or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, Ronda Rousey announced as the star of a Roadhouse remake. It was so weird. It was like being walking someone over your grave. But that's just so dumb. It's like, they just do that because she's like, I don't think anyone cares about her as an Ultimate Fighter anymore now, too.
Yeah.
But it's like, but she's not an actress. So then our idea was we were going to do a guerrilla Kickstarter for our own Roadhouse 2, starring Charlize Theron. It's like the thing
well,
is...
she's going to be Dalton's daughter.
Yep,
right?
Dalton's daughter.
So, yeah.
And then it's like, being a Dalton is not given. It is earned. You are a Dalton. And all these great lines like, I thought you'd be a man, which will be in the new movie.
Well, yeah.
But my other lines would never make it into the new movie. Like the redneck saying, I've always wanted to hit a woman. That wasn't my wife. See, we should make that movie. We grew up in redneck town. We know what rednecks are like.
Oh, yeah.
We can write rednecks better than like some, you know, highfalutin Hollywood person.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, Charlize Theron is the daughter of Dalton.
And so that way it's... You can kind of, it's a kind of a remake. It's like what we've talked about before, where it's like, it's the right
reboot.
Kind of way to do it.
Yep.
Because it's like, it doesn't, that's our plea every month. It's like, make something new.
Well, Deadpool was new, and look how much money it made.
Yeah.
I didn't even see that movie, but it clearly was a success.
I did see it three or four weeks ago. I went and saw it finally.
Is it good?
It's a good time. I mean, okay. It basically fits everything that people have said. You know, it's violent, it's vulgar, it's, you know, it's very much the anti-Marvel movie. But it's like it was Fox made it, right? It's like not actually...
But look at that. I mean, that movie was a huge risk. They spent like less than 50? Half what they did on Ghostbusters Remake, And I guarantee you, Ghostbusters Remake will not even come remotely close to what Deadpool made.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's like...
No way, yeah.
The classic movies that they're rebooting, you know, ad nauseum now, those were all risky films. Yeah. Star Wars was a risk. Ghostbusters was a risk. Indiana Jones was a risk. But the studios took the risks, and they were rewarded.
Yeah, the thing that was amazing with Deadpool, too, was that, like, there was just, like, this awareness around that movie of just, like, everyone. Like, it felt a lot like when Force Awakens was coming out, because it was, like, people at work were talking about it. Like, I'd go and get my hair cut. The lady that cuts my hair was, like, talking about it, like she saw Deadpool before I did. You know, she's like, oh, have you seen Deadpool? Because we usually just talk about movies, and I'm like, no, I haven't. You know, and she's like, oh, God, you gotta go. And it was just kind of weird. It's like, you know, every now and then they just crack the code. And it's like that movie, you know, it cracked the code. You know, and it's basically like, yeah, it was something different. It was marketed very well. Like, Ryan Reynolds did all sorts of, like, kind of stuff on his own to, like, help push it. You know, because he just really believed in the character, was really invested in it and all that. And, you know, people respond to that, you know.
I hope Hollywood learns the right lesson from that. They probably won't. The right lesson to learn is take risks.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything has to be violent R.
Yeah, but that's what they're going to do, though. They're just going to be right. Like, oh, what can we make R now?
What safe bet movie can we turn into an R-rated film? I'm definitely going to rent Ghostbusters when it comes out on video.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm insanely curious about it. How could I not be? Just like Battleship, but... yeah, I'm going to predict that it's going to be a huge turd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll do fine box office-wise, but yeah, it's quality-wise, it'll be a pile, more than likely. And it's like, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's a female cast. Those could all be dudes. I'd have the exact same opinion of it.
Yeah. I think that's what everyone's forgetting. Like, if it was Seth Rogen, Craig T. Robinson, James Franco, and Jonah Hill, which is exactly who it would be.
Yeah.
It would also be a big steamy turd, because I think we've said this before, but we'll say it again. It's like, you want to acknowledge that people's childhoods existed, not say they didn't exist.
Yeah.
In Force Awakens, when Han Solo's like, the stories are real, all of them. Han Solo is saying that your childhood was real.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, these are the new Ghostbusters, you're saying your childhood doesn't matter. That is the key.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can reboot movies as long as you reboot them within continuity.
Yep.
I mean, Force Awakens was a reboot, but it was in continuity.
Yep.
And I think that's what, you know, I don't know. I really don't know what Ghostbusters will do. I don't think it'll do all that great. Because, you know, most reboots do not do that well.
Yeah.
But the in-continuity reboots do. And I would think after 2015, with Force Awakens, Jurassic World, and Creed, that Hollywood probably has figured that out. Like, oh, wait a minute. We have to at least acknowledge the original movie existed, even if we're just remaking it.
Yeah.
Like our Roadhouse remake.
Yes.
It's going to be the same damn movie. It's like Charlize Theron's cousin. It's like, oh, I bought this bar, but... Everyone in the bar is really rough. And Charlize Theron is like, I'm just about done with my master's degree in psychology. But you were the world's best boxer in the military. You could help. Well, see, all right, I'll help.
Well, see, now she'd be like a UFC fighter or something. Like, that's what it'll be in the actual movie. Especially since it's going to be like Ronda Rousey. That'll probably be what she's fucking doing. And then they like, somehow she comes back to the bar.
Well, did you see Expendables 3?
No, I only saw the first one.
So she was in that, and she had like three lines of dialogue. So if you have a movie where Stallone gets more dialogue than Ronda Rousey, what does that tell you about her acting ability? But it's like, I gotta find some new Expendables. And so he goes, there's like this montage, and he goes into this bar, and he's like, oh, who's gonna be good in here? And then like, this woman in a red dress beats up some guy, and like, that's her. She's the bouncer. So clearly someone's like, hey, she was a bouncer in Expendables 3. She should be in our remake of Roadhouse.
First of all, remake
of Roadhouse doesn't really need to exist at all.
No.
Just like Weird Science, those two movies belong in the 80s and they should never escape.
Yeah. The only thing I've seen her in is I watched the last Fast and Furious movie, which she was in for some reason, I think. So... She's like, and again, yeah, she's like a bodyguard type character in that. And but yeah, God, the parts where she has to say something, just block of wood. But thankfully, she has like a fight sequence in it, and so she's like pretty good for that. But yeah, the moments where she has to like try to rip off a one-liner or something, it just like hits the floor. It's really bad. So it's like, yeah, to try to like make her the focal point of a movie, it's like, how can anybody think that's a good idea? It's just, ugh.
Yeah. Whereas Dalton, I mean, Patrick Swayze had a lot of charisma. Well, not a ton, but more than she'll have.
Yeah.
You are a Dalton. I've left that life behind. Oh, and there's going to be a scene where she's standing at her father's tombstone, and the epitaph is, "Death don't hurt."
Death don't hurt. Yep, exactly.
And like then this guy comes up, he's like, "Your father was the toughest son of a bitch I ever knew, and he wasn't tough enough to fight cancer. There's one fight no man can win." And then Charlize would be like, "The best way to win a fight is to not get in one or something."
Yes.
And then she beats up everybody.
Yes, because she has to start off with the moral high ground or whatever, and
or she has to refuse the call to adventure.
Yep.
Oh, but then like her cousin Skypes her and she's got like a black eye
from
a bar fight, and then Charlize is like, "Oh, it's on," and then she shows up,
gloves are off.
Yeah, she's got to be like this like all like professional looking woman with like mini skirts and stuff, but then she shows up at the bar and she's like super tough.
Yep. She's in like blue jeans and
There's got to be some guy with a knife, and then she like sticks it into his hand or something.
And then, like right in the bar.
Yeah. Some guy's got a hit on her at the bar, and then she beats the shit out of him. Oh, then someone's got to say, "You're a bouncer. Doesn't look like you've been hit in the face too much."
Oh, God.
Wow, we've just talked about we spent like 20 minutes talking about this shit. I guess I'm going to have to change topic to Roadhouse Remake.
Well, the thing is, like, honestly, yesterday when I was sitting at the theater waiting for the movie to start, they had some commercial for, like, YouTube Red,
mm-hmm.
and apparently they're making, like, original programming for that and stuff. Everything I saw, I'm just like, this is dog shit. Like, who wants this? And I'm just like, why couldn't the crap that we've made, I mean, it's better than this. It's... I'm just like, come on.
Oh.
It seems like the bar keeps getting lower. So.
And eventually it'll reach us?
Yes, so eventually we'll be above it. That's exactly what I thought when I was sitting in the theater.
God.
I'm like, we just got to keep hanging in there. Eventually we'll be there.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that reminds me. I should talk to you about this movie idea later. Not Roadhouse 2.
Very well. Yeah, we don't need to somehow recruit Charlize for it, so.
Okay, so basically, VR would be a great way to watch a remake of Roadhouse 2 in virtual reality. First person Charlize simulator.
Well, see, you don't want that, because then you can't see her. Except for the scene where she goes in and sees herself in the mirror. You know?
But, yeah, but that's how it starts. It's like Fallout 4.
Yeah.
It's like, select your character. It's like, do you want Monster Charlize, Fury Road Charlize?
Yeah, Monster Charlize would look like a bouncer.
Did you ever see Mighty Joe Young?
No.
Oh, you should. It has like a 21-year-old Charlize in it.
Nice.
Yeah, and Bill Paxton. It's actually a pretty good movie.
Hmm.
It was directed by Ron Underwood before he directed Pluto Nash.
Oh.
And then went to permanent movie jail.
Did he do Tremors?
He did.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so VR, it's cool. I don't know. I think the price is a little too high. I don't know if it's actually what gamers want. Like, ultimately, gamers did not want the Wii. They did not want the Kinect. They want to sit in their butt with a keyboard or a controller.
Yep.
I don't know how many times it has to be proven. But yeah, we'll see. I don't think I'm going to buy one. I'll just, I'm sure one of my friends will buy it. I'm sure Chris will buy one.
Yeah.
So we'll go over to Chris's and play it. So yeah, maybe we'll have a report.
There we go, because I'm not buying one, so.
Okay, so our next topic is Roadhouse Remake. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to talk about Nintendo for a while because, we love to hate on Nintendo. We are unabashedly anti-Nintendo, not anti-Nintendo, but we don't give them any benefit of the doubt, I should say.
Yeah, I was going to say we rip on them because we loved them once.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're a shell of what they once were.
It's like that scene in Flashdance where she goes into the strip club and she's like, you shouldn't work here. You're too good for this. Because I finally watched that movie on a plane.
I've never seen it beyond the opening sequence where she pulls the chain and the water drops on.
Oh, it's not a good movie.
Because I remember Dale, like, bought the DVD.
Yeah, and him and Dave watched it all the time.
Yeah, because he watched it, and I'm just like, what the hell? And he's like, okay, you have to watch the first 5 minutes. Because he told me about that scene. He's like, you have to see it, cause it's just so ridiculous. And so I did, and it was definitely something.
if you have, like, Dirty Dancing, Footloose, and Flashdance, it is definitely the weakest film. Although I think it was the most successful, because shit sells.
Yes.
Anyway, Nintendo. So I guess the rumor that Nintendo has denied, because, well, spoiler warning, companies always deny rumors like this, is that the Wii U is ceasing production at the end of the year.
They deny it because it's true.
Well, exactly. You don't admit it. Yeah. Like, are you ceasing production of this console? Yes. Stock price. Boom.
Yeah, stock price plus all the inventory sitting on shelves and in warehouses. Takes a Noah's dive.
Right, because if people think the console is going to, you know, die, they're going to stop buying it. Although I think that's already kind of happened.
It'll be Virtual Boy 2.0.
Probably more like Dreamcast 2.0. Like at the time they pulled the plug on the Dreamcast, there was more Dreamcast hardware in the production pipeline than had been sold.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess, what did the Wii U sell? Like just over 10 million units? It like really slowed down.
Yeah, it's not even half of the GameCube.
Yeah, it's their least successful home console by at least 10 million units. Not very good. Now, granted, the Xbox One is only about 10 million units ahead. Although it's doing good historically for itself. The PlayStation 4 has just completely run away with this generation.
Yeah.
It's 36 million or something like that.
But yeah, it's selling like at a crazy rate. Like, I think it's the fastest selling console ever. So
yes.
it's a pretty high bar to reach.
I don't think the NX is going to be meant to compete with the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4, because I don't think Nintendo will try to compete, because in their mind the Wii U is trying to compete. And there's just no way you can compete. The PlayStation 4 is just such a runaway success.
Yeah,
if Microsoft with more third-party games and better online infrastructure can't compete, Nintendo certainly can't compete.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the NX will be a portable. One of the rumored features is there's an HDMI dongle that you pull out of it and stick into your TV. If that doesn't say it's a portable, I don't know why people would think anything else. Because they're Nintendo fanboys?
So does Nintendo still sell like the DS and all that?
I think this is a 3DS now. Oh no, they have a new 3DS.
Well, of course.
Who names things at Nintendo? The Wii and the Wii U, then the DS, 3DS, and new 3DS.
Well, that's actually what they call it, is the new 3D. You
weren't
just saying, oh, there's
a new 3DS. Games are not backwards compatible. The new 3DS has a faster processor. So if a game is meant for the new 3DS, you can't play it on your regular 3DS.
Yeah, that's not
confusing.
Granted,
the Xbox One is an even stupider name.
Yes, it's dumb.
The Microsoft can't do math department. Xbox One, Xbox 360, Xbox One... Windows 7, 8, 10.
That one, though, makes sense if you think about it on a technical level.
I know, but it's stupid.
I don't know.
Okay, so the conspiracy theory is the reason it wasn't called Windows 9 is because old programs look for a window version of 9X, as in 95 or 98, and they would be confused by a Windows 9.
Yes, because that is one of the big strengths of Windows is that people can keep running old shit on it for forever, so code has to continue to support it.
Yeah, that's when you see stuff like the Nintendo Windows Universal Platform or whatever it's called. Like Tomb Raider, you can buy it in the Windows Store, but it's like tied to your Windows account. Basically, it's apps for Windows.
Yeah.
And God, I would think Microsoft would realize that is exactly why people use Windows, is because it isn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
they should look at stuff like Final Cut Pro and all the things that happen on Mac that piss off the traditional Mac users and be like, let's do the opposite of that. People buy Windows because they want a computer that can run ancient crap.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want this walled-off garden of code. I mean, granted, that prevents viruses and whatnot, but, you know... It's risk-reward. People deal with it. Anyway, that has nothing to do with Nintendo. See, look, we ripped on another company.
Yes. But see, Microsoft should have called the Xbox One the Xbox 720, even though it's like it doesn't really make that much sense, but it's a bigger number, because that's the American way of thinking is it's like bigger number, better.
Right. I mean, the PlayStation 4 has zero creativity in its name, but you know exactly what it is.
Yeah. You know it's newer than the PlayStation 3, which is really all that matters.
Because the number is higher.
Yep.
So I think the people talk about like what Nintendo needs, and like what Nintendo needs more than anything else is third-party support. And I think, you know, we have this whole age of YouTube internet gamers who, you know, are too young basically to remember before the Nintendo 64. Mm-hmm. Nintendo used to be really big for third-party support, but it was with the Nintendo 64 they started just pissing it down the drain. Like, almost like deliberately trying to push third parties away from their system. I don't know if... I'm sure it wasn't on purpose, but they just didn't seem to care anymore.
Yeah, and it was maybe because they were, like, so strong for so long that they thought they could get away with that, but that was right around when the PlayStation came around, and so companies had another place they could go, and like we talked about on one of the other podcasts, they were CD-based.
Yeah, the publishers could make more money on every game. Yeah. Plus, it was easier to develop for, and that's really where... You know, they lost support, but then they never really tried to get it back. Like, the GameCube had a non-standard controller. Nice controller, but non-standard. And it used those 3-inch high-density discs or something.
Yeah, goofy format, yeah.
And then the Wii, you know, had weird, even weirder controls. And there was a lot of third-party stuff on the Wii, but, it, you know, there was some shovelware stuff that would sell well, like carnival games. But anyone who gave a shit and tried... They died on the vine on the Wii, like Mad World or that game with the wolf and the paintbrush. Well, nobody like bought that stuff.
Yeah, and there's like that Call of Duty game, you know, where they actually tried to, you know, utilize the Wiimote, and yeah, nobody gave a shit.
Yeah, it's become a Nintendo first party title adapter, and that just doesn't work. That's why we've said this for years. That's why you have something like the Wii U proved us right. It's like, if you only sell consoles to people who only buy Nintendo games or the people who want Nintendo games, it's very limited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there are a lot of people that like Nintendo games, but apparently not that many.
Yeah.
I mean, if those people really bought en masse and were that big of a market, I mean, would the Wii U be being killed off after 4 years?
Nope.
I mean, you have to have more games. Well, you should also create new IP as well, but you have to have more games than just Star Fox, Mario, Zelda, blah, blah, blah.
I was thinking, what was their last new IP? Pokemon?
What was that thing? Pikmin, I think, was new.
Okay. I don't know. Nothing I'd care about, but it's been a while, basically.
I think, you know, we're old enough to remember the Nintendo-Sega Genesis transition, where it's like Sega Genesis, it was popular because it was like, I was a teenager when that came out, and I'm like, oh, this is cooler than Nintendo.
Yeah.
I was already like, you know, I wasn't like Mario's for kids, but I was just less interested in it. Whereas Sega Genesis, it had blood and Mortal Kombat, and there's a lot more shooter games, and there were sports games, and there are things that were more appealing to me than like, you know, some guy running around in tights and with a sword.
Yeah, and like Sonic the Hedgehog was a different kind of game.
Yep.
It was really cool.
We're old enough to remember that transition, and I think people need to realize that Nintendo permanently lost a lot of customers in the early 90s. Not because of anything they did wrong, it's just like, it's kind of like an Adam Sandler movie. Like, Adam Sandler's fans got older, but he didn't. Or at least the humor didn't.
The type of characters he plays didn't,
Right,
it's kind
right.
of like stuck.
But what could Nintendo really do to entice third party? See, that's why I think they're going to go Android, is because that's their best chance to get third party on board.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a news report that said we have to change the user interface so people don't mistake it for Android. Guess what that means?
Yeah.
It runs Android. I was like, it's amazing how people cannot read between the lines on this stuff.
So, like, what do you think?
Politicians, companies, they all speak the same way.
So what do you think this thing will be? I mean, you said it's going to be a portable, but it's like... Okay,
well, there were...
if it's a portable, like, what's it really competing with then?
Well, there was another rumor that it was, quote, closest in power to the Xbox One.
Okay.
Now, people... Here, logic question, Jones. People think that means it's more powerful than the Xbox One. But what else could it mean?
It just means that it's, you know, not as powerful as the Xbox One, but it's close to it, and because, it's not as close to the PS4.
Basically. Right, because if you're comparing the three things...
It doesn't necessarily mean it's in between them.
If you compared my clock radio to the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, since the Xbox One is about 20% less power from the PlayStation 4, that means my clock radio is closest in power to the Xbox One.
Yep.
It's just like a logic math puzzle. It's not that difficult.
Yep. But of course, people hear what they want to hear, mm-hmm. just like with everything in life, basically.
So I guess that's a question, like, could Nintendo... I mean, the 3DS still sells really well considering the dominance of smartphones and tablets. I mean, I think that's the market in which they feel they can still compete the best, and I believe that is correct.
But that's kind of my question. It almost seems like if they're going against anything, they're essentially cannibalizing their own market. I mean, it's like, yes, they'll go after smartphones and stuff, but they're also going to potentially hit that 3DS market too. You know, it's like if they're going into a portable realm.
Well, I mean, but think about it historically. The Nintendo DS came out a mere 3 years after the Game Boy Advance, and it completely took over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think Nintendo's afraid to, like, just throw things out with the bathwater.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, remember, this is the same company that made the new 3DS. They'll probably try to say it's like a portable home console hybrid or something, because they don't want to just say we're abandoning the home market.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, the thing is, you know, a mobile ARM chipset, like a brand spanking new one, actually probably could approach the Xbox One in terms of graphic power. So I'm not saying it's going to be like a Game & Watch, you know, POS. What, have you seen the prototype controller where it's like a long oval and there's like joysticks through the LCD?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Now someone made a fake one as a joke and put it online, and then everyone's like, oh my god, it's the new controller, although I think it's the new system, not the new controller. And then the guy's like, nope, it's a fake, here's how I did it. But it was based off the patent drawings that they filed like years ago. But yeah, that's my big thing. It's not the controller, it's the system. I'm gonna stick with that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, and the thing too is, it's like if they go down that path, then they're on a completely different platform from what the PS4 and the Xbox One are as far as game development's concerned.
You really think Nintendo's going to make an x86-based system?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like what you're saying is that they're going away from that. So it, again, kind of hinders the third parties from coming to them, because it's like, oh,
yeah,
here's a... I mean, it's like, yes, I know it'll be Android or whatever, and that's the thing, maybe it's just different types of games, you know, but it's like, are developers really going to line up and be like, oh, we'll make Call of Duty for this thing, you know, without seeing that install base there? Instead of like, oh, if it was x86, oh, it's just a port. You know, it's pretty easy. Here we go. So
I would be incredibly surprised if it's an x86-based system.
I mean, I get that. I'm just saying, isn't that a bit of a mistake on their part?
Because... Well, this is Nintendo. Nintendo doesn't make logical decisions. Now, sometimes that works out great for them, like the Wii U, the Wii.
Because that was kind of like with PS4, you know, that was something that Sony kind of learned. It's like, oh, you know, the cell was a bitch and a half for developers to deal with.
Yeah.
We're going to simplify. And
Wii U. I guess, we could talk briefly about specs. So the previous generation, PS3, Xbox 360, Wii, they all were based around PowerPC architecture, which is what used to be in the Macs. It's kind of an IBM thing. Now, with the PlayStation 3, it had something called the Cell Processor, which was this newfangled chip. It was still PowerPC based. So the PlayStation 3, it had a PowerPC core and then eight, SPUs. Yeah, special processing units. So the special processing unit could do really cool things, but it made it harder to program for. Whereas the Xbox 360 just had a PowerPC core times three.
Yeah.
So it was actually, again, their cores were kind of similar, but the PlayStation had these cool features that nobody wanted to use, whereas the Xbox was just like, okay, there's three cores.
Yeah.
It was just kind of more power, more straightforward. And then the Wii was also... Well, the Wii was an overclocked GameCube. Literally, that's all it was. So that was also PowerPC-based. But then when you went into the current generation, Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are both x86 based, which is like what PCs and Macs use.
Yeah.
And they have a few differences with what their graphics and RAM can do, but they're pretty much the same thing. Whereas the Wii U basically took, it's still PowerPC based. It's a 3-core PowerPC, so it's pretty close to what the Xbox 360 was.
Yeah.
But it's a different architecture. So that's one of the reasons why, as soon as, you know how they were making last-gen versions of all the new games until like last year? Anyway, in 2014, if there was a multi-platform game like Far Cry, whatever, and it was on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360, and Wii U, because there was still, you know, a high-target PowerPC version of it. Once they stopped making last-generation PowerPC versions of new games, the Wii U basically has nothing now.
Yeah.
So that's
sounds right.
That kind of helped it die. So you're saying is like if they make it ARM-based. Well, I would say ARM has a lot more, well, infinitesimally more support than a PowerPC system now.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think you're just looking at different games potentially. I mean, it's like right now that's mainly the smartphone tablet market is hitting that, which is fine, you know, but it's just a different type of game. That's where I say, like, you know, don't expect to see the latest Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or whatever that's on the Xbox One and PS4 showing up on the NX.
If my predictions are correct, I mean, I think Nintendo fanboys are going to be very disappointed with what comes out.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. I don't think it's bad what they're doing, because when I look at it from a, you know, an outsider's perspective, I actually think it makes sense. But I'm not a Nintendo fanboy either.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense than continuing to try to compete directly with Microsoft and Sony, because they can't. So
yeah, basically.
You got to try something different. So.
But then if you look at the portable market, they dominated that for like 25 years. But now they are facing their first real competition with smartphones and tablets. And like, do you see kids playing Nintendo DS? Like, they're all on tablets now.
Yeah.
It's completely taken over.
Yeah, because that's the thing, like, it surprises me, you know, that they still, like you said, oh, they got the new 3DS, and I'm just like, who's buying these things? Because I never see them.
Yeah, like a few years ago, my niece had a 3DS, but now tablets, all tablets.
Yeah, because you can buy, like, a cheap-ass tablet. You know, you're not talking about iPads and stuff here.
You can buy a tablet Android for the cost tablet. Of, like, a Nintendo 3DS. You can get the games for, like, a dollar or two. And oh, another thing is I'm pretty sure it'll be digital download only.
Yeah.
Why don't people just accept that's coming? Or maybe they do and they just don't want to accept it?
I accepted it on the Xbox One. Every game I've bought for it's digital download.
So. There was a survey. Microsoft was asking people, like, what if you could return your digital games for, like, 10% of the original value?
Yeah.
So apparently that must be something they're toying with.
Yeah, you know, it's like, why not? It's like, oh, I bought this game 3 years ago. I'm never going to play it again. But it's like, oh, if they give me $6, I might put that towards buying this new game that they brought out. So
yeah, I remember when I worked at Funko Land back in 1995. And like clockwork, all of the PlayStation 1 early adopters, who all looked the same, by the way. It was a 100% true stereotype. It was... Guy in his 20s wearing dirty starter jackets with a frumpy girlfriend. Every PlayStation 1 early adopter looked like that.
I forgot about the starter jackets that everybody used to wear.
Dirty starter jacket.
Yes.
Anyway, like clockwork, those guys would come in every week and they would trade in 2 PlayStation 1 games to get one new game. Because back then you get like, you know, it's pretty new, so you got $25 for every game.
Yeah.
I bet people are like, oh, 10%, blah, 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 blah. But you think about someone's Steam library, like if you could like, get rid of 6 games to get one more game, people would do it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like 10% or whatever. It's like, well, that's still more value than it just sitting in your digital library taking up space that, you know, you're never going to play it again. So, yeah, I'd certainly consider it.
So, I mean, the people who, like, just cling on to digital media really are kind of dumb. Because if you think about it, digital stuff, time and time again, it's proven people would prefer convenience over quality. That's why MP3 players killed CDs.
Yep.
That's why streaming is killing DVD sales. And The same thing will happen with video games.
Yeah.
It's like, who cares if it doesn't have any value? I mean, does it matter? Like, ooh, my car, the days of a Nintendo cartridge being worth $100 are gone.
Yeah.
It's like, Nintendo was on cartridges because that's the only way they could create that medium. Mm-hmm. Because, again, people don't remember, back in the 1980s, floppy drives were just as expensive as the computers.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, cartridges were the cheapest way to distribute a game. The cartridge wasn't cheap, but it was cheaper than expecting the person to have a floppy disk drive.
But yeah, that was like, because like, yeah, when I got my Xbox One, I don't know what made me do it or whatever, but it's like I was just, well, I think it, yeah, it came with a download code for the Halo collection. So it's like, that's kind of smart on Microsoft's part, because it gets you thinking about like, oh, look at this. I just pulled down all this content online from the comfort of my living room. But then, like, yeah, the next game, I saw they had some sale on there, and so I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Don't have to get off my couch. Click, click, boom, there it is. You know, wait 20 minutes,
yeah.
Game's there. You know, and I'm just like, why wouldn't I do this? Instead of having to get up, drive to the store, hopefully they're not out of it, having to deal with all that horse shit, and then, you know, getting back home, popping the game in, and then finally playing
it. And it still installs anyway, so the disc basically has no value once you've installed it.
And the thing is, too, you know, we're very much an instant gratification society, you know, so it's like, you sit there, you can click a couple times, boom, you know, $30 disappeared, or $60, whatever you're buying, and you don't really even think about it either. But then it's like, within a short period of time, you know, maybe you go off and make yourself some dinner, and by the time you're done doing that, oh, your game's there, ready to play.
Yeah, when I was buying the Phantom Pain, I actually think I had to go to 3 different stores to find it because it was out of stock.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, wait, I could have just downloaded this.
Yep. So yeah, I think I remember you posted that on Twitter, and I'm like, you could have just, like, clicked a couple times.
here's another argument that people always bring up with download only. It's like, what about people with shitty internet connections?
Yeah. And I mean, that's...
Although broadband penetration in America is at like 75%.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where the days are numbered, I'd say, you know, until we get to download only. But yeah, I mean, that is always kind of the barrier because you have people that are in rural areas, you know, and whatnot. But
even rural people can get like DSL. I would think that the percentage of Americans who don't have high speed are probably old people that don't care.
Could be.
I mean, 25%, that could easily just be old people.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's something else to think about. The other thing is people are like, oh, retailers don't like it when they can't sell physical copies of games, right?
Yeah.
That's like the theory is like Apple products cost more because they give a bigger percentage to retailers on the hardware because the retailers have no ancillary software to spend.
Yeah.
But guess what Nintendo has? Amiibos that the retailers can sell.
Yeah.
So Nintendo doesn't have to give a crap if the retailers can't sell physical games, because the retailers can still sell Amiibos.
Yeah, they can still sell like $1,500.
Yeah, they can
$15 hunks of plastic.
Yeah, they're basically Happy Meal toys.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I'm just saying, Nintendo doesn't have to worry about that aspect because retailers can still do that.
It's true. Well, the thing is, like retailers, you know, they can still, and they've already been doing this for years with some games, but they can have the cards in the stores, you know, where if people don't want to, you know, stick their credit card into their console, it's like, well, here, you can still go to the store and buy this card. Or if you want to give somebody a gift, you know, you can buy the card and wrap it up.
The other thing to think about is, like, why care about the retail model? The retail model is dying.
Yeah.
So who cares?
Well, and if you're Microsoft or Sony or whoever, it's like, yeah, why do you give a shit about it? It's like you're cutting out the middleman. It's like more money for you if people just come directly to Xbox Live and buy their games.
Yes, because here's the other thing. Let's say you're Nintendo and you love money, right? So if you sell a $50 game in a store, you know, I don't know, Target or whoever probably gets like $20 of that.
Yeah.
If you sell it in your own online store, you get 100% of that. Mm-hmm. Look at EA with the Origin service.
Oh,
everyone's like, why did EA do that? Because if an EA game was sold on Steam, Steam got 30% of every sale.
Yeah.
EA was probably like, EA probably thought, okay, will it cost us less to make our own digital distribution service than it costs us to give 30% of every game sale to Steam? Mm-hmm. If so, then we create the Origin service. That's why you do it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why Valve doesn't need to make Half-Life 3. Yeah. It's like Valve already gets 30% of basically all PC game sales.
Yeah, Valve basically does not have to make a game again ever. There's no reason.
So Nintendo can make more money with a... of course, it's going to be their own online store. It won't be like Android Market. Nintendo will make more money selling their games digitally through their own store than they would via retail.
Yep.
And the purpose of a business is to make money.
What?
So, yeah, that's what we kind of think about the NX. Probably going to be a portable. Nintendo needs to be open to third parties, although, yeah, they're not going to get AAA stuff. They're going to get, you know, they'll probably get really good mobile stuff.
So it's likely going to be announced and shown at E3 this year?
I would think so, yeah.
So when do you think it's actually going to come out?
This fall.
It would come out like Christmas time. Yeah.
That makes sense if they're ceasing production of the Wii U at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Actually, they may be ceasing production already, like if they think they have enough units.
I would think. You know, it's like, why keep making them? Because they're going to want to sell as much of it, as much of the existing inventory as they can before they pull the plug.
So. Maybe the Wii U will become like this beloved underdog console like the Dreamcast is. There's some hardcore Dreamcast fanboys out there.
Oh, yeah. I loved that system, but, I mean, I moved on. But and that's the thing, like the Wii U, it's like we were texting the other day, and it's like the people that have them seem to really love them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's... Yeah, I'm sure the people will hang on to them and enjoy their nostalgia.
Oh, the other thing, if the controller has a screen, which I think it does, well, I think the controller is...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, let me rephrase that.
System, yeah.
You know, regardless of if there's a fake prototype or not, Nintendo did patent that weird controller thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to make another home console with a screen in the hand because that failed with the Wii U.
Yeah.
So... they wouldn't do that twice, which means that, again, that points more to it being the system.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than the controller for the system. Or like people are like, oh, there's going to be an x86 base and then an ARM portion that you detach and then you play the games on the road. It's like, come on, that's stupid.
Yeah, why would they do that?
So we'll have to see. But again, I think we'll be proven right. So listen for our end of June podcast where we're like, ha, 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 we told you so.
And if they're smart, they'll have the new Zelda come out at launch.
Yeah, because they held it back for the Wii U, which probably means they're porting it forward.
Yep. Kind of like Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so our final topic. There's this thing called Screening Room. It's a service that they're going to try, which is to allow people to rent movies in their home, stream to their home, the same weekend they come out in theaters. And the cost is estimated to be like $35 to $50.
Okay.
And the gimmick is they're going to actually give a percentage of that to theater chains to get them to off their backs. That's basically like a bribe, actually,
yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you think about that, Jones? I think it's actually the future. Hollywood just doesn't want to admit it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the VR thing. You know, this will be kind of like the introduction into that world. Whether or not it's successful or not is dicey, but it is certainly where things are going to be. You know, like, again, 10 years from now, I'm sure it'll be very commonplace, you know, day and date to be able to sit in your living room and watch a movie if you want. But it's like, this thing, what's the cost of the thing itself? Because don't you have to buy the system itself, and then...
I would assume there's a box, or it just streams over other boxes. Why couldn't it just be a service?
I could have swore there was some sort of hardware with it, but maybe not, maybe not.
Well, I read about it in Den of Geek, so I'm sure it goes over their Skyboxes. There's no reason it couldn't be, like, an app. Like,
screening
room app, yeah. And you get it for, like, your PlayStation 4 or your smart TV.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's a good idea. It's like, I think the price will be tricky, although, like, if you think about it, you know, like we've talked about, I think, on previous podcasts, when you go to the movies and you see how expensive it is and stuff, and you sit there and you're like, how the hell does, like, a family of four do this?
They don't.
You know, and
aside
it's like,
from a few Pixar movies a year, they don't.
Yeah, but it's like now, you know, with this, it's like maybe they would do it more frequently because they wouldn't have to buy all the overpriced food at the theater.
Yep.
They would just have to pay $50 and they can watch whatever the new movie is.
I think the sweet spot would be halfway between what it costs a family of four to go to the movie theater and what a Blu-ray cost.
Yeah.
So I $50 is too much. $30, I think it would fly off the shelves.
It'd be pretty feasible, yeah.
Because here's the thing. Okay, this family of four is not going to go see most movies anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're losing $60. It's kind of like with piracy. It's like these people weren't going to buy your game in the first place. Yep. So you're not really losing money to them. But then you have something like Steam where it's like, okay, let's make it easier for the pirates to buy a game than it is to pirate it. And look how successful that was.
Yeah, there's like an opportunity, you know, there to make more money that you're not otherwise getting.
So maybe they could think, oh, we're only going to get $30 instead of the $60 we'd get if this family went to the theater. Yeah. But if the family doesn't go to the theater, you get $0. Then the other thing is, okay, we'll wait for them to buy a Blu-ray. Well, in that case, you only get $20.
Yeah.
But most people don't even buy that many discs anymore. So most people go to Redbox.
Yeah, they go to Redbox or they have Netflix and they watch whatever shows up on there.
Right. So, and Redbox, all you got was the one disc sale to Redbox. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was not much money. And
so, yeah. So, let's say that it's 10 cents or something. So, what would you rather have, $30 or 10 cents?
Well, the thing, if you look at this, like, to me, it's like families are definitely the sweet spot for something like this. Because even if it is $50, I mean, that is high, definitely. But if you think about it, you know, if you've got people that they like going to the movies, but it's like they got little kids or whatever, and it's like, okay, well, if we want to go out to the movies, then it's like we got to hire a babysitter.
Or pack up the kids and put them in the car.
Yeah, and all that shit. Or, you know, we have to pack them up and drop them off at grandpa and grandma's or, you know, whatever it is. But it's like a big hassle, and something they just say piss on it and they don't do it. But it's like there's a cost with all that, but it's like if you could be sitting at home and it's like, oh, it's like $35 or whatever, and you know, I want to see Batman v Superman, but it's like I can't take the kids to it because they're like 2 or 3 years old, and I don't want to hire a babysitter, but now I pay $35. The kids can get tucked in at whatever time, and I can just watch this thing and not have to worry about a babysitter.
What about our friend Dale? Does he go to movies anymore?
I think if they go, they primarily go to like the drive-in for that reason, because the drive-in's a good value, and you're in your car, so if your kids make noise,
you only have to unload and load the kids once.
Yeah, and if they make noise and stuff, you're not really messing with other people then.
Yeah.
So
they just need to realize everybody has effing kids.
Yeah.
And kids rule your life if you're a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just that much. It's not, even beyond the cost, just the trouble of doing that. When going to the movie theater is less convenient than just watching something on your couch, most people will watch things on their couch.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have kids, like I don't have kids, and if I could have spent $30 and watched Batman v Superman this weekend,
yeah,
I probably still wouldn't have done it, but I might have. Because it's not just that. Even when you don't have kids, it's the time it takes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 30 minutes to go to the movie theater, 30 minutes of ads in front of the movie, then 2.5 hours of effing movie, then driving home. You're talking about 4 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas when you watch something in your home, that's why streaming is so popular. I think it's and more popular than even DVDs or Blu-rays because there's no ads. You push the button, the movie starts.
Yep, it's just the runtime.
It's a better experience. So it's like, okay, if I want to watch Batman v Superman, and as everyone knows, I hate long movies, but you know, I'm like, okay, this will take me 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I can pause it to go to the bathroom.
Yep.
I can get food from my fridge. That for me, that'd be a better way of seeing movies.
Well, and like with that too, you know, it's like, let's say that was like a common service that was out there. It's like, you know, me and you might have like talked this week or maybe like Felix or somebody, we might have all been like, oh, hey, yeah, we want to check that out. It's like, okay, let's all go to somebody's house. We'll all split the cost. You know, so if there are like three of us, then it's like $10 a piece, which, you know, that's what it costs us to go to the theater. But guess what? The studio is getting more money out of that $30 with us getting it over that service than they would from us going to the movies and buying three tickets.
Yeah.
So.
Or you're getting more money than $0.
Yes. Yep.
I don't know. I just think it would be a better experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, it definitely has potential. There's no doubt about that. So
I really think that's the future. I don't think theater's going to last forever.
Well, it's like I sit there at work sometimes and I talk about how, you know, the theaters will die off and it's like, you know, in 10 years it's going to look a lot different than it does now and everybody just kind of laughs at me and it's like, How can you not see that?
Well, think about you work with, you know, people who have like kids and stuff. Like a person with kids and that's married, when they talk about movies, they consider a movie to be out when it's on video.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be like, is that out yet? They don't mean is it in theaters. Yeah. They mean is it on disc?
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, Hollywood with their like limousine baby chaperones and stuff, they probably don't realize that's how the real world works, yeah. But it is.
Well, and that kind of calls back to what we were talking about earlier, where it was like how Force Awakens and Deadpool somehow, that's what was unusual about them, is that they were movies that were just coming out into the theaters and people were talking about them.
Yep.
But it's like, yeah, like you say, normally it's people are talking about like, oh, I watched, you know, Spotlight the other day or Room, because it's like, well, those have come out on video now and people saw them at the Oscars, but it's like they didn't go out to the movie theater and watch those movies.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, that's why they aim everything toward teenagers, because as soon as someone is an adult and they have kids, the amount of free time they have just drops through the basement.
Yeah.
So if you want, I think you could make more money doing this because, yeah, instead of getting like a percentage of like a Redbox fee,
yeah,
you could actually get more money up front, you know, if you had like some sort of reasonably priced movie rental system. Yeah, I would say 30 to 40 tops. Like once you got past 50, again, people don't care. Like people are used to waiting for something to be on disc. Hmm. But if you think about it, you could like completely get rid of home video altogether, which will happen as well.
Yeah.
Like instead of advertising the movie twice, once in theaters and then once on home video, you could just advertise it once.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe when you get the digital download that, you know, then it unlocks, you know, a permanent copy in 6 months or something. You add some sort of perk to it, or you get $5 off, you know, the final copy or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they already have started with that a little bit, you know, with, like, trying to sell discs. Like, some of the pre-orders at Best Buy, it'll be like, oh, here, pre-order the disc, and you'll get a code to watch the movie online, like, 3 weeks before the disc hits. So it's like they're trying to incentivize you to buy the disc, but then they're also trying to get you comfortable with the whole concept of just streaming your movies and not even being dependent upon the discs anymore, which is the end game. There's no doubt about that.
So most movie theaters that converted to digital are 2K projection. They're not even 4K.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, watching the movie in your own home, if you had a 4K television, would be a better experience. You would actually get more pixels out of it.
Yeah.
Isn't that sad?
Have you seen, you probably don't go to Best Buy much at all, but the last time I was there, I see that like these 4K Blu-rays are out now. Like they
requires
just came
a special
out,
player.
And they're like, they're either $30 or $40 each. And I'm like, who the fuck is going to buy this?
All the original content on Netflix is 4K.
Yeah. But I was just like, who's going to buy these?
Yeah, it's dumb.
I'm like a hardcore movie guy. And I'm like, well, I don't have a 4K TV.
I think you're like
yet.
The last person that buys
Blu-rays. But it's like, I'm not going to freaking buy that. You know, it's like, not for that.
If yeah, because 20, you need a special player, too.
Yeah.
I could see if there's... That's the thing. I don't know if the PlayStation 4 has HDMI 3.0, which is required for 4K. I don't know if it does.
Yeah.
I mean, if the PlayStation 4 could do it with a software update, it might be feasible. But if it requires a new player, dead in the water.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
Dead in the water.
Well, and that was why Blu-ray was as successful as it was because of the PS3 being a Blu-ray player.
Yep, same thing with DVD and the DVD. PlayStation 2. PlayStation 2, again, how soon we forget, at $300, it was the cheapest DVD player back in 2000.
Yep, and the PS3 was the cheapest Blu-ray player by a wide margin when it came out, even when it was at its original price point. It was cheaper than standalone Blu-ray players.
Well, I'm sure if you're, you know, a Blu-ray plant, you're like, oh, crap, all this equipment is going to be obsolete in, like, 3 years. I have to stretch it out as long as I can.
We need more blue diodes. There's
the
a callback.
Diode is irrelevant.
That was, like, episode one.
It wasn't that old.
It was the first one where we did an intro.
What was the first intro on the show? Was it...
The first intro one was where it was just like the random Star Wars themed clips because it didn't have like a real narrative to it like the later ones did.
I know it was Tetris Island wasn't the first one, right? That was like
five. Oh, the first like narrative type intro?
No.
Because the first intro was the Star Wars theme.
Didn't we
one.
Do Console Wars a couple times because it was like...
I know we did one for the video podcast.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember getting up off the couch, and you had it where there was, like, the Xbox button in the sky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not Xbox that one. Fanboy. I mean, another Star Wars one. It was like, I will make it legal. You were like, make all the blue diodes.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, I think we've probably bored people enough with our Roadhouse 2 talk.
We'll let you know if we're able to score a sit with Charlize and pitch the movie tour.
You know that movie that's already in production? Well, we should make... Yeah, it's just like when they make two Ant movies or two Asteroid movies. Like, there should be two Roadhouse remakes.
Yeah, we'll just call it something different, but everybody will know what it is.
It'll be like when they made A View to a Kill and Never Say Never Again in the same year.
Yep.
All right, well,
just call it Bar.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for today. I guess we'll talk to you next month.
Adios.